I'm Alan Grisby from the Strange and Unusual Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor tonight. My name is SP, and your other reporters for this special episode 167 are Chris.
You owe me $20, BT Dub.
And Michelle.
I know. I failed my city.
But didn't she say I didn't fail my city?
No, because he always says you failed this city.
Oh, yeah. So she was trying to mock him. Got it. Okay, this podcast is recorded on Sunday, September 10th, 2017, and broadcast live from the Starling Tribune headquarters studios via www.geeks.live. Remember, our newspaper is full, chock full of spoilers, facts, and speculations about Arrow, and heck, the rest of the CW, DC TV movie and comic universe.
That's right. And today we'll be discussing Vixen, as well as other news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past week that could and very will impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as the other shows such as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, and fingers crossed a returning Constantine one day.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Hey! I think that just about does it for the intros. Michelle, let's just dive right in and go ahead and break down the Vixen series for us.
Sure. We're covering Vixen. It originally aired on the CW Seed. Season 1 is 6 episodes. It originally aired, if you wanted to say aired, August 25th to September 29th, 2015. Season 2 is 6 episodes, aired October 13th through November 18th, 2016. The movie was originally released digitally on May 8th, 2017, and on Blu-ray and DVD May 23rd, 2017. We're talking about the CW aired version, which was Wednesday, August 30th, 2017. Directors, James Tucker, also has done 4 Legion of Superheroes, 5 Static Shock, and 5 Batman Beyond, and Kirk Gaeta. Kirk actually has the credit for this, the movie part of it. Also has done 8 Beware the Batman and 10 Batman Beyond. Writers, Lauren Certo has also done 3 episodes of The Flash. Nolan Dunbar wrote the Arrow episode Broken Hearts. Brian Ford Sullivan has written 11 Arrows. Wendy Miracle, she does this little thing called Showrunner on Arrow. I think we know her. And 2 other names we're familiar with. Kido Shimizu has written 6 Legends, 11 Arrow, and A Flash. And Sarah Tarkoff, who has written 7 episodes of Arrow.
Wow, so a lot of actual talent from the CW shows there, Arrow, Legends, and The Flash. Good to see that. Nobody from Supergirl, though. We need to get a crossover with Supergirl next season.
Yeah, getting Supergirl into a Vixen. I mean, Vixen is great, but to be big enough to have the interdimensional, yeah, maybe a creative crossover, like a writer from Supergirl working on a Vixen, that would be interesting, but in actual, that might be a stretch.
Well, definitely a creative crossover. That's what I was referring to. But then as you started talking, I was like, you know, everybody else is on there. There's no big, not everybody, but most everybody else. I could see Supergirl in here, but we'll save that for another time. Now let's run down the Vixen animated movie ratings. And we're talking about the one that aired Wednesday last week on September 7th. Let's face it, it didn't do very well, but it had already been out for a while. So this is just people that are coming to it that hadn't picked it up anywhere else or the CW seed or bought it somewhere. And this was not in the middle of the TV fall TV series. We're in kind of a break in between the summer and the fall series. Some of them are just starting to pick up this week. So 700,000 viewers isn't bad for this. Matter of fact, I'd say it's pretty good considering all things. I would love to be able to contrast it with some of the Marvel animated series or the DC Dark Knight series, whatever, that are on the other sub channels like Disney XD for the Marvel stuff. But I have no idea what those ratings are. I think 700,000 is pretty high for this sort of thing. Chris, what do you think?
It's okay for a summer thing where nothing else is going on, where you have low expectations. But bear in mind, when we were ripping on Arrow, it was when it was getting like 1.6s and stuff like that. So there's a difference a little bit in ratings. It's not to say it's a bad thing. I would love to know what their numbers were online for consumption, because like you said, SP, this was more of a, here's a simple way for people to catch up, because I almost bought the Blu-ray, but I went, oh, why am I going to pay $15 for this? I can watch it online for free. And then I went, wait a second, it's going to be on TV. I can just record it and skip all the commercials, and promptly forgot to record it on TV, so my ratings aren't counted on there, and then watched it online yesterday and today.
I did just about the same thing. Now, I know Michelle actually watched it last Wednesday. I literally forgot, by the way, to record it on the DVR. That is simply the reason why I didn't. Michelle, you actually watched it. It wasn't just the animated series. They had a block of 2 hours, which is about twice as long as you need, but they added additional content while they were airing this, right?
Well, they added a lot of commercials. I mean, a lot of commercials. And then they had like these little snippets that were previews for the four shows. So saw a lot of Mark Guggenheim and actually got to see Wendy Miracle and hear her speak. Which they're behind the scenes. So listening to and seeing all them was something. So, you know, learning about teases about what's coming up. And one of the best things I liked, how they actually describe the Legends as a bunch of, they mess everything up. That's them. And then they showed a little bit from the animated Rey series, which I have forgotten about. It's not the Atom, Rey Palmer. So it's on a different Earth, Earth X, and he's a superhero and all that type of stuff. I was watching him and going, I forgot about this. And they only spent like 2 minutes on it, and I can't actually describe what it's about. So they didn't do a really good job about promoting that, which is sad.
Bummer. Well, they did have a lot of teases and getting people really excited for the series that will be starting just in a couple of weeks here, which we are going to gear up for. In the meantime, let's step back a second. Let's look into Vixen the movie in kind of two seasons, season one, season two. Michelle, what did we get here? What was the theme of the Vixen series?
Well, it's an introduction to her. This is who Vixen is. And one of the reasons why they actually aired it on TV is because her sister, Kawasa, is actually going to be a villain on Legends next season. And that's why I sort of convinced the guys to talk about this, because it's like, hey, it's actually going to matter even more. Because right now on Legends, we have Amaya, who is Mari's grandmother. But in this case, this is actually going to be a character from the animated series actually going to be, you know, on one of our shows.
So looking forward to Kawasa now that I know a little bit more about her. I knew nothing about Vixen going into all this stuff. Vixen, both iterations have been phenomenal to see on the small screen. Can't wait to see more into her background as we go forward, especially since as we left the Legends of Tomorrow, there were dinosaurs.
Yeah, everything's all borked up at that point.
Yeah. So, yeah, lots of stuff going on. Chris, do you know anything about Kawasa that you like to drop right now?
Everything I know about her, I learned about while watching Vixen. So, no, I don't really have anything extra to add.
Okay, fair enough. But you are our fight expert here on Starling Tribune, and there were several fights that occurred during this series.
There were, and of course we open with the big guns. We've got Flash and Arrow versus Vixen to start things out. And I have to make sure I call him Arrow, because he is not yet the Green Arrow at this point in time. He's still wearing the old costume with the whole sleeves and the hood. He hasn't been turned into a killer, basically, and had Roy pretend to be him. So we're going old school, guys. We're going back to like 2015 right now.
2015?
I think that's when that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 2015.
Wow. Time flies.
You had me doubting myself there for a second. I was like, I'm pretty sure it was.
Wow.
So we open this fight with, like I said, her taking on our big two heroes. And it's this point in time, we don't know yet, but she's really just starting to get a handle on what all of her different abilities are. We see her use a really cool camouflage ability, like a chameleon. And of course, Oliver sees through it. But one of the coolest moments is when she figures out she can fly.
That would be awesome to be able to fly, right? Right, Michelle? You've always wanted to fly, right?
Sure. Yeah. Have to make sure you wear goggles and stuff, because all those bugs will get in your teeth. I loved it, how first Barry was like, she can teleport. And Oliver's just like, no, dude, it's camouflage. like, not everything's a superpower.
This brings up a great point about her powers, because, or her necklace, whatever you want to call it, because unlike the TV show, she can go back and forth between animal avatars just like that, like not without touching the necklace or anything. And then in the TV series, it's a little bit more strained, like you have to stop and reset. You can't do it on the fly, which they're able to do here because it's animated and they don't have to worry about the CGI during the live action series. So it's a little bit more fluid. And I'm wondering if you guys know, is this how our powers are supposed to work, or is it supposed to work more like we see in the Legends of Tomorrow series?
It's very similar to how they did it in Justice League Unlimited with Vixen's powers there, where she could very much just change them on a dime. Only there, I don't think they did like the weird energy effect where you saw a ghosting effect of the animal. It was like an animal sound you'd get and then something else I can't remember. But it's been presented this way before in animated context, so I was cool with it.
All right. Well, then we move forward, and there's even more fights. I mean, there's just a ton of fights, right? So Mari goes after her sister.
That's right. She goes after her sister, but really her sister kidnaps her because she wants the totem in this case. And Mari gets poisoned so that Kuasa can steal the totem, but she still puts up one hell of a fight while struggling to fight the poison in her system.
Yeah, that was... You know, she's in the middle of, like, the wasteland, and then the magical animals come, and it's like, you're really the owner of the necklace, Mari. We choose you.
It's the circle of life.
Yeah. It was very interesting. I think if this was not a web series, that part of it could have been fleshed out a little bit more, and it might have had a little bit of a bigger impact, but because this was... little like 3 to 5 minute chunks. So, but when you watch it all at once, it kind of happens all of a sudden, and then animals, but she wins.
I got to step back. It's like, from what I recall, when this first came out, it was like 5 minute increments or 5 minute chapters they had. So it kind of makes sense when you think about how they broke it up that you'd have a real quick fight like that, that you would spread out over a 5 minute span before things end up wrapping up.
Yeah, there was no draw. I mean, there were big fights, but they were not drawn out longer than a few minutes, because that's all the time that you had. I mean, this is the speed of Kid. You're talking about little snippets in between commercials, basically, or little webisodes, which were great for when they came out. I mean, I'm not going to knock it at all, but yeah, the fights really just don't last all that long. And some of them are contrited to the point where you're kind of leaving out some main things. So she had a fight against the smugglers as well, and Caesar the gorilla helps out Mari.
I like to pretend it's Harambe.
Rip, Harambe. You're always in our thoughts.
We miss you, Harambe.
But Mari is getting in better control of the spirits as she's moving on. And this is the one that really caught my eye, was the big Detroit fight at the end of the second series of webisodes, where Mari is going up against Ishu, which I didn't know who Ishu was, but now I do.
Yeah, I didn't know who he was until this either. But yeah, he's the big, bad, burning Detroit. And then Mari goes back to Africa to get her sister. Apparently, they have a magical transporting ring because they come back in enough time to come steal the water totem. And then Kawasa was like, no, I want the water totem. And then they start to fight. But then Black Canary and Ray come along and they're like, no, we need to fight the fire totem dude. And so this is really big, epic water and fire. And then eventually, you know, Mari gets Ishu underwater. And that was a cool fight.
It's the same kind of travel they're using in Westeros this season, where things that took forever to travel, you're just there like that. I mean, it's because plot, to steal a phrase from Neil. But yes, it was awful convenient how quick they're able to go to Africa, back from Africa to Star City, from Star City to Detroit, in the blink of an eye. Now, granted, part of that could be narrative considerations. It could be hours have passed, but we're not going to see that because that would be awful boring to watch Mary sitting on a train going between Star City and Detroit.
So what you guys are missing is that Elon Musk has developed his high-speed bullet trains that are going back and forth between Europe, or Africa in this case, and all the cities in North America. It's just all because of Elon Musk. He's making this travel possible in the CW Berlantiverse.
We'll go with that. That sounds exactly like what's happening.
All right. A little bit about the fight, though. Kawasu, her power is water, right? And she was going against Ishu, and she was dousing him in water, but it had nothing, no effect on him, or he was able to burn through it. Whereas when Mari puts him in the ocean, the water affects him there. So I'm a little confused. Did the water affect him or not?
I saw it as a Avatar, The Last Airbender sort of deal, where it's the power of the wielder, the person that has like better control. The fire totem really bonded with Ishu. One of the things that you learned in that first part with Mari and Kawasa was that the totem really bonded with Mari. That's how the animal spirit was able to come and help her and get it back. When we see Kawasa again, she's very weak. She doesn't have a lot of time with the water totem. She basically sort of forces the water totem to work for her. So I'm thinking it's part, maybe she's just weaker and maybe she really wasn't meant to wield it. And he basically was just able to fire bend better than she could water bend, and therefore he won.
Let's also keep in mind that Kawasa had been weakened previously to this. She'd lost her connection to her magic as the result of getting poisoned at the end of season one. So she's weakened physically and magically, you could argue, before she picks up this totem, and then pretty much goes straight from picking it up, trying to fight her way away, getting caught, and then having to fight the fire totem. So she hasn't had much time with the totem to learn any skills, and she was weakened previously. So that probably doesn't help her in a fight with someone who, since he got the powers, pretty much been wrecking face across the city.
Hmm. All right. Is there any other fights that you want to bring up, Michelle or Chris?
Well, there were a lot of other little fights. I didn't want to go over like all the muggings and everything. I thought it was really interesting that she either went up against henchmen who were trained by stormtroopers, or her animal spirits just know how to dodge bullets consistently, because there was a lot of guns and she never got hit.
It's hard to shoot a moving animal. You know, you a stable animal, it's hard enough, but you get an animal that's moving and it's hard. So yeah, I can see her evading. Yeah, especially when you don't know exactly where you're shooting, because the Avatar is this big ghost over the main. So if you're shooting at the Avatar, you might not be hitting Mari. So yeah, I could see that.
Wonder if the Avatar, the ghost effect, has some kind of shielding effect when that's hovering around her. It does seem to make her super strong, I just realized, when she's channeling a bird.
That's right.
Yeah. And then she used the hawk wings to help shield from the fire, from Ishu and the fire totem. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that they didn't really go into with what all her magic could do.
Because magic, it can do anything, guys.
Until they defined it, and you're absolutely right. It can do anything. But you have to be careful on how you define it, because if you define it how you defined the Zat gun in Stargate SG-1, you end up with something that you wish you could take back for 17 years. Just saying. So let's move on into Mari herself. This is Vixen, and she's been in Detroit before, but she's just coming back. And I'm a little confused as to exactly how we entered into this, because it looked like a flashback, but it was actually right where it started. Help me out, Michelle.
Okay, so the chase is the present, and then she's falling. And then as she's falling, it flashes back to 3 days ago. And then you follow her. She ends up in jail. Her foster dad bails her out. And then she's asking about the necklace and then all that type of stuff. And then when you see the chase again, that's when it's caught up again to the present.
Okay, so we're getting the chase twice because Oliver and Barry are so important.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's the draw to get people to watch Vixen, is they introduce the character in Arrow, and then it's, hey, go watch this, you find out more about her. Oh, and Barry and Oliver are on this show also. It's kind of a good way to get people who might not have cared as much to then go and see it, because like, oh, I like these guys, I'm going to like this if they're in it, even though they're in it for like 5 minutes.
All right, but Mari doesn't know her history as we start. She doesn't know what the necklace can and can't do. Matter of fact, she's a little freaked out about the whole thing. So we get in the first series, in the first half an hour of the movie, we get to find out about Mari's past, which we really haven't seen so far. All we have had are references back to Zambezi. And we get to understand exactly what happened with Mari with this series, which is really cool.
Which then helps us find out a little bit more about what happens to Amaya, which makes you feel really sad.
Yeah. We find out that Ishu is the warlord who comes into the village and burns and kills her family. And, you know, her mom is able to take the totem and her and run out away from the village. And somehow the baby gets to America. So, you know what? In our particular climate right now, it's sort of difficult for us to wrap our head about like how the baby would have gotten to America. But in this world, perhaps immigration is a lot easier to happen. And refugees have an easier way of entering the country, because somehow she ends up with the McCabes, who are her foster parents and who love her. And she also has the necklace, so.
That's right, the McCabes. Neil Flynn played Chuck McCabe and
Jan Etor.
I kept on going back to his roles that he's had in the sitcoms going, oh my gosh. He did play a dad on TV, so that was good. He also played a janitor, which is good because he's got a lot of cleaning up to do after these fights.
Jan Etor.
He cares for her, and he's just like, you know, I mean, it's okay, you're a superhero, but, you know, you want to be a fashion designer. Don't you want to, like, design your fashion?
Yeah, why not? It's, yeah. And you know what? I could totally see Mari as a fashion designer in real life, because that's just a talent that I could see her having, whether she does it for money or a career or just does it for fun. I think she could be the new suit maker for everybody. Huh? Go.
They've got better guy.
Her suit is a lot better than her dress, because at that party, she's just like, here's my dress. I made it myself. And I'm just like, my inner Nina Garcia comes out and is like, that is basic. I could have bought that in a store. That is not fashion. I'm a huge Project Runway person. And so it's like, no. Because what got me is that there's this character behind her who's wearing this red dress, this woman, and it has this really cool, like, neckline with the upper cowl or something like that. You know, that dress was interesting. You're just in this strapless tube purple thing. That's basic.
So I did see some of the behind the scenes little scene things, little clips, little webisodes, whatever you want to call them on the CW seed, one of which was going into the actual animation of the characters in the Vixen series. And one of the things that they talked about was the fact that they could not replicate the costumes perfectly because some of the textures just don't come out very well on animation. but they thought in the end what they did is mimic the costumes as best they could with the capabilities that they had with the animation. This is not lifelike animation. This is little kids animation that's computer generated nowadays. And once you get the model of the individual done, then you just run with it. And unfortunately, they just aren't able to model every single texture out there. So Oliver looks a little lighter on top, and the Flash, for instance, he doesn't have the intricate chest area that he does in his normal costume. I mean, it's all good. They look like the Flash. They look like the Green Arrow, but it's just slightly different from what you're normally used to seeing on the CW.
Oh yeah. I thought they did really well with the costume and everything. Like, I'm not complaining about like their appearances or anything.
The costumes we saw on the animated screen looked pretty damn close to what we saw on the actual screen.
I would agree. They were just saying that they are different, and here's why. So there you go. So Mari has a sister. We get introduced to her, and, you know, she reminds me of, and I'm going to cross the streams a little bit here, Nebula over on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where she's kind of like, I don't know, chaotic neutral at best. And there's some good parts to her and some bad parts. And unfortunately, in the animated series, she is no longer, because she was evaporated by Ishu. So I'm curious as to, well, I guess time travel is how they're going to bring her back. But it will be interesting to see if they coincide what happened in this series with where her character is.
Well, I think what's interesting is that this is not white canon now, because in this, Cisco is the one that names her because she's hot. He names her Vixen because she's hot. So now it's like, where does that name come from? Like, we have Amaya and we kind of call her Vixen and such. And I think, does Ray die in this? Does Chow also kill Ray? I mean, I know he takes them out, but
I don't think he kills Ray. I think he just like force pushes him back.
Oh, okay. So I think it's one of those things to where it's parts of it, I think little bitty parts of it might not like translate. So, you know, time travel, part of me also wonders, maybe she's not dead. Who knows? Because it's, we never saw a body in his comic books. When you don't see a body, they're probably not dead.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, and it's comics. Who cares? You can always bring somebody back in comics, especially when you're talking Legends of Tomorrow. So we also have, and again, not necessarily a good guy, kind of a bad guy, but not really, in Professor Adam McAllister. I knew nothing about Professor Adam McAllister when I entered into this, but as soon as he made that one phone call to Kwasu, I was like, oh, this is a bad dude, and Mari is very friendly with this guy, so this is not going to end well. And it kind of didn't, but she came back, accused him, and he talked his way out of it.
And they seem semi-friendly come season two.
Yeah. So that was interesting. Michelle, what did you think about that whole interaction?
Well, there's a year between season one and season two. So she knows he betrayed her because he wants funding, like he's a wannabe Indiana Jones. And time does things, and he does come back and he gives her an apology, but they end up working together, and he does end up helping by finding the fire totem song passage, whatever, in the book to help Mari save the day. So he has a little of a redemption arc, just like Kwasu kind of has a little redemption arc. I mean, she's like, I'm the protector of Zambeze, but her, you know, like you said, it's kind of twisted, but how she sees herself needing to be the protector. But in the end, she helps. So in the end, he helps.
Okay. So one of the things about this whole series is that we found out that there were five kind of gemstones that were meant to protect Zambeze, and that the Waterstone was one of them that they fought over. And then Vixen's amulet, is that what it's called? The amulet?
They keep calling them totems.
The totems. Okay, so five totems. And so you've got Mari's totem, you've got the water totem. There's still three totems out there. It kind of reminds me of the Infinity Gauntlet, but not quite. So anyway, there's five totems and one of them's destroyed for the most part. So there's three more of them out there. So there's a lot more that we can discover about the background of Zambezi here.
Did we ever see what happened to the water totem when it was all said and done?
Yeah, like where did that go?
It just evaporated.
No, because just because the body dies doesn't mean the actual stone dies. That's why part of me was like, is she actually dead? Because we don't see the water totem.
Transmuted to water, perhaps, and evaporated. And will reconstitute when it rains. I don't know. I'm talking out my butt.
That's what I mean. Like maybe she evaporated and the water totem evaporated. Or maybe she's, her evaporated self is in the water totem. So if the fire one's destroyed, Vixen has the spirit one. Where is the water totem? And then we don't know about air and earth. Who knows what happens?
Well, all they have to do is take the remains back to a Lazarus pit and they're good. It just all comes back, right?
Don't forget, guys, it's taken us 10 years to figure out where five Infinity Gems are with Marvel. We've figured out where two of these gems are in a 30-minute season. So we can wait a little bit of time. We got a little bit of patience.
All right. But there are three other totems that could be found eventually. So just stay tuned for that as we enter into this season. It might be another totem that we're looking for in this next season of Legends of Tomorrow.
That's what I was thinking, because it's all supposed to be about magic. So it would make sense if they're doing their whole little Infinity Gauntlet-esque storyline.
You know, I remember once hearing from the creators of the Berlanti verse that no way, shape, or form were they going to go into the magic universe, especially with Arrow. I think that myth has been busted.
Oh, yeah. They went magic in season 3, right?
Yep, they did. Magic in the metas and everything. Dang it, Barry, you screwed everything up.
Yes. When all else fails, blame Barry.
It's easy to do. Easy to do. So, Michelle, we got a couple of other characters that are new to the CW universe that could you run them down really quick and who they are and what their importance are?
So we talked about Ishu, who was the warlord, who we are convinced dies in the underwater fight. And then we had Dr. Lena Vargas. I actually searched who voiced this character. I have no clue. Not listed in IMDb, not even on the Wikipedia page. So whoever you are, you did a good job. She's the one that helps Mari understand the animal spirits. She had, Dr. Vargas had dated Chuck and then they had falling out, but she helps with the smugglers, gets immunity and ends up with Chuck again. But it was kind of nice to see Mari have to learn a little bit about what to do. And that was kind of interesting. Yeah. And then basically all the other people who came, you know, Felicity came along and helped them steal the water totem. You know, Cisco was there doing his Cisco stuff. And then we had a brief appearance from Firestorm.
Very brief, but still cool nonetheless.
I guess a tsunami is good enough to break them apart and douse their powers. Just doesn't seem right.
And I thought it was a lightning.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Could be. I seem to remember them getting caught up in the tsunami at some point in time. I was like, that causes them to break up. Oh, well. But yeah, we do get a lot of main players from the rest of the Berlanti verse. Is that what we're calling it now, by the way? Somebody corrected me the other day. I just want to make sure on this podcast, are we calling it the Berlanti verse or the Flareverse? What are we calling it now?
I call it Berlanti verse.
It's kind of interchangeable. I've used both, I think.
Okay. Well, I'm going to stick with Berlantiverse because that would include like Supergirl, who's not technically part of Flareverse. So that will include it all. So I'm just going to use Berlantiverse. So, okay. So we got a lot of the main characters from the Berlantiverse in here, which was awesome to see that much collusion within here. And just the fact that Vixen gets text messages from Cisco all the time saying, ooh, 911, here you go. And that she's magically able to get there pretty fast using her totem. I guess it's Elon Musk again helping out. So that's pretty cool to have a superhero distribution system that can get people all over the country in a blink of an eye. That is awesome. Way to go, Elon. You not only bring people to Mars, but you bring people closer together faster here on Earth.
Yeah, it was nice seeing, you know, the cameos. But my favorite has to be the moment between Oliver and Barry. Barry mentions Cisco, but then he's like, well, if there was somebody affiliated with in my life named Cisco, but there is no Cisco. And then Oliver's like, God, were you and Felicity separated at birth? And then he's like, well, I hope not, you know, because that means that kiss was awkward.
And he's like, what kiss? That was funny because Oliver was dating Felicity at the time, I think.
This could have been during the Will They Won't They era. It's all blurring together.
Well, hopefully it will come to some sort of finality here in the next month.
Yes, when they bring it back for season 6. Yay.
I think anybody's gunning for that. We'll see what happens, though. Well, we've been talking about it all summer, folks. So, yeah, there's speculation that Felicity will be back. There's speculation that Felicity's going to die on the island. So we'll just see what Berlantiverse ends up giving us. Well, is there anything else that you guys want to talk about? This is a great series. Two of them, half an hour each. You can go to the CW seed and watch it for free. Chris, what were your final thoughts?
It's fun and it's entertaining. I mean, I'm glad I didn't buy the Blu-ray because it's probably a one-time watch for me. So if I can watch it with just a few commercials for free, basically, it's good in my book.
Michelle, you were really jazzed about this, and I really appreciate you bringing it to our attention before the season starts, especially with Legends of Tomorrow, so we have some basis on Kuwasa was. How'd you feel about the series in general?
I thought it was fun. I, too, would recommend watching it for free. I mean, if you've bought the Blu-ray, hey, that's awesome and stuff, but if you're on a budget and everything, because it's available online, just go ahead. You can play them all at once, correct, online?
You can play each season at once. So you can play the first 30 minutes and get some commercials scattered here and there. And then I think season 2 is 35 minutes without commercials.
Yeah, there definitely are commercials interspaced in there. Season 2 has a more robust outro in between the shows. So you get to see full credits in season 2 versus season 1. It was more like jumping just from webisode to webisode. Season 2 was more like little blocks of episodes. So it was a good watch. And oh, by the way, this is a good time for us to remind you, our listener, that in case you don't have cable or CW where you are, you can always go to the CW app and watch the latest episodes for free before they're put on Netflix at the end of the year. So you, without a cable subscription or satellite, can keep up with the CW shows.
We are not sponsored from the CW app
yet.
No, we're not, but I mean, it's to our benefit for people to watch this stuff and keep up with it so that they can then come to Starling Tribune and listen to what we have to say.
No, here's the thing, SP. That, what you did, was so good and so professional that I want to make sure listeners realize that we are not sponsored by the CW app. Now, makers of the CW app, if you would love to sponsor us, then go right ahead. We would love it.
We don't actually have any money coming in. We're not monetizing this. But if you wish to give us some money, you can contact me at StargatePioneer@GunnaGeek.com. So, Michelle, what do we got coming up next time?
I would love to do a prediction show about Legends of Tomorrow. That, I think, would be fun.
So we're going to obviously do a prediction show on Arrow. We're looking at doing a prediction show of Legends of Tomorrow. And listener, if there's anything else that you would like us to do before the season starts, you can go ahead and contact us at all the great ways. And we will take your thoughts into consideration as we build our brief schedule between now and when the shows start. All right. That is it for the main Vixen segment. We are moving on to the news. Coming to you live from the Starling Tribune main newsroom in Starling City in Earth 2. Chris, you have a wonderful story about Deathstroke.
That's right. That's my shtick on this show, is I like to cover the Deathstroke news because he's my favorite character on the show. Well, Arrow Season 6 is going to feature a 2-episode arc featuring Deathstroke. We found this out from CBR.com. Arrow executive producer and co-showrunner Mark Guggenheim revealed that the first half of Season 6 will include a Slade Wilson-centric story, a 2-part episode heavily featuring into the high-profile DC Comics antagonist, complete with flashbacks told from Deathstroke's perspective. We're doing a cool 2-parter with the flashbacks will be from Slade's perspective, Guggenheim told Collider, revealing that they will be the 5th and 6th installments the upcoming seasons. In his own words, it's very much a Slade-Oliver two-hander.
Now, do we know for sure where the crossover is going to be in the fall. Is that episode 7?
I don't think we know yet.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's episode 7 because usually we get about 8 episodes before the Christmas break here, holiday break, whatever you want to call it, in the fall of the show. So I don't think they would do the crossover as the mid-season finale. So these are right before or during the crossover. That's interesting. So I'm guessing it's right before. So episodes 5 through 8 are just going to be great. It's going to be a good 4-episode arc. So look forward to that later on this year. And Chris, you're just stoked about seeing the Deathstroke, aren't you?
Very much so.
All right. Another aspect to this is Slade Wilson's son. And we just so happen to have a news segment on that, right, Michelle?
Yes. Entertainment Weekly exclusively revealed that Lucifer alum Liam Hall has been tapped to play the son of Manu Bennett's reformed villain, who will appear in the 2-part Slade Wilson adventure. Joe Wilson has followed in his father's footsteps by joining the secret Australian military agency ASIS. So if I try to pronounce that as a word, we might have to bleep it. After years of brutal combat, Joe now finds himself in a remote Tanzanian prison under the alias Kane Wolfman, fighting for his life.
Wolfman Jack. I wonder if he's a radio DJ in his spare time.
I see what you did there.
So I don't have any of the history behind that. I did get into the Deathstroke comic just a little bit earlier last year, but I kind of had to put it aside for a little bit. Is this out of the comics, or is this something that they've created for the show?
My guess is that Joe Wilson's a take on Jericho, who they called Joey in the Titans books, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So they're skirting around canon in the comics, I think.
Okay. That would be par for the course, actually. So that's all good. Another great news story that we have coming your way is we have waited for this for quite some time. Colton Hayes finally teased an Arrow Season 6 return.
That's right. So if you aren't familiar, Colton Hayes is fairly active on Twitter right now. He likes to respond back to fans and the like. And he did portray Roy Harper in the series Arrow, like we like to talk about. Well, a fan was on Twitter kind of lamenting the fact that Roy hasn't been on the series. It's been since Season 3, I think, that we last saw him. Well, Colton then confirmed, replying back to the fan, that, quote, Roy is coming back very soon. We don't know for how many episodes, for how long it'll be, or how much he'll be there, but I, for one, am super excited to see him come back. Because remember, Stephen Amell has said in interviews, he goes, I'll consider it a failure if we don't have Colton Haynes return as Roy at least one more time before this series wraps. So not a failure now.
It'll be good seeing him come back, but I would like for him to interact with Thea as well. And I'm not sure, is Thea a season regular this next season or not? I seem to remember we talking about it and that she was being brought back as a season regular, but I don't remember for sure.
I don't honestly recall.
Yeah, because I think she's dead and he's coming back for the funeral. But I should save that for the prediction episode.
No, okay, we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks here. So moving on to the next news story is a little bit of villain matching, which is interesting.
Yeah, Entertainment Weekly reported a little bit more about the villains. So they've learned that each of the villains this season is going to be basically matched to someone on the team, like Anatoly with Oliver, or Black Siren and Black Canary. And that the same can be said of Vigilante. I know who he is, Stephen Amell says. I'm not going to tell you who he is, but I would tell you Vigilante is a villain, if you want to call him that, for a member of the team as well. So first, it's nice to know that we're going to find out who Vigilante is, because that was one of the frustrations we had about last season. 2, we know that Vigilante is now a he, because he keeps saying he, so that negates my whole it's Helena theory. But I'm sort of wondering who Vigilante could be connected to now. So
I have no idea. That's going to be fun. There's been all sorts of sites trying to post there. Here's who we think Vigilante is. And I've read a bunch of them, and it comes down to it's someone we haven't met yet, but that we'll find some significance to. So I was like, I fell for the clickbait. Damn it.
Yeah, this is all interesting to me. I've been thinking about Vigilante all for like a year and a half now, and just looking forward to finally figuring out what is going on with that character, especially since we knew that it was going to be pushed to this year. Now, keep in mind, with the low ratings, I have no idea whether CW is going to ride it out, or if the ratings get better, that'd be good. But we might have to wrap up a few story arcs really quickly. And I'm just hoping that they know that where they want the character to stand up and are be able to direct them there no matter what happens. I think they said that they're pretty confident that they have a story for the next 2 years. So we'll see on Arrow. And Vigilante, of course, is a part of that. So I just want to make sure that we find out who Vigilante is before the show ends, because that will bug me forever. Even if they tell me in a convention later on, I won't believe it unless I've seen it on screen. So moving on into general DC news, we do have an addition in Legends of Tomorrow for Damian Dark's daughter.
Right. So we talked about either last episode or the episode before, you know, whatever happened to Damian's daughter at the end of that season of Arrow? She's just kind of there, and then we don't know anything. Well, now we do. Dexter and Parenthood alum Courtney Ford has been booked in a recurring role as the daughter of Damian Dark, Entertainment Weekly was able to learn. The actress will first appear in episode 305, and she'll play Eleanor, who is both smart and cunning, with a charming dose of otherworldly creepiness. Think Wednesday Addams all grown up. Her innocent looks can be disarming, but it's all an act. The woman is dangerous with an uncanny ability to manipulate others and to tell other people exactly what they want to hear. She's highly intelligent and is always several moves ahead. Her unique dark talents all stem from the fact that she is Damian Dark's daughter. And further on in that article, they also talk about the fact that Ray finds himself strangely attracted to her, so this could be interesting. Comedy alone.
I know. Anything from Damian Dark at this point in time is going to be interesting. Although I did say that I'm a bit done with Damian at this point in time. We love Neil McDonough. We really do on the show. I do as well. Liked him ever since his first appearance on Band of Brothers. Thought he was a phenomenal actor. And I just don't know if it's working anymore in the context of the DC universe. So I think we need to move on with the villains there as we go forward with what happens with the time stream. That's just my two cents there. I don't know, Michelle, do you have any countering opinions?
Yeah, because I'm trying to figure out how they're going to bring Damian back, because they keep saying that it's supposed to be a post Arrow, but then what do? They drag him to a Lazarus pit or something? Or is he like not quite dead on his way to the morgue and then they find him or something?
Not dead yet.
Yeah, not quite dead yet. Take him over to Miracle Max. Those first couple of episodes about how they bring him back is going to be really critical, because if they don't bring him back in an interesting way, in a way that's, well, believable for Legends, then it's really going to hurt for the rest of the season, because then we kind of like rolling our eyes.
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, it's just a popcorn show, first of all.
No, I mean, if they do it in a way to where it's just not either fun, or it's like we've seen this Damian before, because this is season 3 of Legends. So if they don't do it in a way that's interesting, like last season, they did it in an interesting way by picking him up in the 80s. Okay, so that was interesting. It was before all the stuff. But if they're picking him up around the time with him being on Arrow during the whole arc thing, you know, that's when he dies. So that's my thing. It's like, if they're going to deal with that Damian Dark, that's when I'm trying to figure out how it works.
Yeah, I don't think we have any clue at this point.
No, it might be worth him coming back if they could increase the quality of the fight as it comes in, because Neil's been working with the choreography team for quite some time. And even though he's probably got a stand in, at least the fights wouldn't be as degraded as they've been from Arrow season 1 and season 2. So that might be a positive of making this move. We'll see. We won't know until it actually happens. And then finally, our last news story that we have this week is a little bit of executive producer Andrew Kreisberg, who's dropping a tease about Supergirl.
Yeah, one of the things they keep saying is that this next season of Supergirl is really going to focus on the sisters, Kara and Alex. Well, it seems as though that relationship is going to be the center of all 4 hours of the crossover. And it's Alex and Kara are going to be doing things in tandem, and the crossover won't be any different. So it's very interesting because, first off, it's nice to know that Supergirl is going to have a bigger part in the crossover than last year. But that was understandable because all of a sudden Supergirl's part of the CW, you know, but now they have time. Though it'd be interesting to see how they get involved in the crossover. It's going to be interesting. Like, do they go like last year from their Earth to, you know, Oliver's Earth, or do they go to Supergirl's Earth?
I don't know. I know that they can only have so many characters on any given episode just because they would have to have at least a line of dialogue, and it would be difficult to make them a main character along the way. So it does make sense for them to transport characters from show to show, a limited set of characters transported from show to show, and then they all play in the show that they're main in. So for them to travel to Supergirl's universe, you would have a limited amount of people that you could bring with you, and that would limit the actual crossover for the show that you're actually on. So I don't know if that made any sense or not. It did in my mind, and we'll see what we get later on this fall.
Yeah, unless Cisco can figure out a way to do the interdimensional time hoppy thing with the Wave Rider.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be cool.
Then you could just shove everybody on the Wave Rider.
Yeah, and just take them over in one big arc. Yeah.
I like this plan.
And drop them off in different places. Yeah, yeah. It's a good plan. Ladies and gentlemen, send your royalty checks for the story idea care of Stargate Pioneer at GunnaGeek.com.
You know, actually, there was a court case and they ruled that nobody owes you money if you share an idea over Twitter. So I'm thinking if you share an idea on a podcast.
Copyright Starling Tribune 2017.
Okay.
Twitter isn't copyrighted. This podcast is, in fact, copyrighted. So there's our solution there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
Yep.
Thank you, SP.
You bet. It's in the ID3 tags of every episode. So talking about every episode, there's a lot of episodes on the Gunna Geek Network, which we are part of. And Chris, why don't you tell us about one of the great other episodes that are also ID3 tagged on the Gunna Geek Network?
So like SP mentioned, there are a lot of shows on the Gunna Geek Network. And each week we try to highlight one specific show, kind of give you a taste. And be like, hey, you might want to check out this show. It's a lot of fun. And this week we're talking about episode 37 of the Digital Soup podcast, entitled Frankenstein. In this episode, filled with tangents and wide-ranging topics from Crash Plan and Black Blaze backup news to more games taking advantage of mobile AR tech, including The Walking Dead and Star Wars. Plus, usually Dave spills the beans on the No Peek 365 photography challenge he is taking part in, and what the heck is all this about buttfumes.com talk? So go check out the Digital Soup podcast over on the Gunna Geek Network.
I have to admit, I did listen to that podcast and I did a face palm when they got to that buttfumes.com. So it's an interesting part of the show and don't miss it. You can check that out. Once again, episode 37 at GunnaGeek.com.
So guys, it's time for us to start wrapping things up. So a big thank you to all the live listeners who were taking part in the chat room and also anyone who goes and watches the replays at a later date.
And remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays. And we're ramping up right now for the new Berlantiverse year 2017-2018, including the sixth season of our main coverage show, CW Zero.
You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at gunnageeknetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. And you can now follow us on Instagram.
Woohoo! Michelle's got a new Instagram account. Yay!
So this wraps up another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag totems are cool.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag 20 bucks BTW.
And I am at Michelle Ely signing off with hashtag where is that water totem? Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at gunnageek.com or check out our archive at starlingtribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.